This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bring everybody you know to go vote in the primary, and then let's do everything we can to win Kentucky in November.
Let Kentucky join the other 19 states so far and demand a political revolution in our country. Oregon also votes on Tuesday, and we hope to make it 21 in Oregon.
If you vote for me on Tuesday, I will stand up and fight for you through this campaign and every day in the White House.
She's got to stop yelling. And I'm not kidding. It's completely unfair. It's a completely unfair scorecard because women have to fight that battle. But she does sound shrill. She does sound like your mom yelling at you. And she does create a problem for herself when she does that. I don't know how somebody that doesn't. Chuck Todd could fix it. Chuck, please tell Hillary Clinton to stop yelling.
Steve, you are walking down into a buzzsaw, brother.
I know, but I'm trying to explain that. I'm telling. I
know where you're going here. I just think it's honestly, it's just because there haven't been a lot of women to run for president, and you know, the running for president is filled with a lot of stump speaking, and we're just not. I think as an audience, we're just not used to it, and I just think over time, as more women run for national office, as you see more women on the stump, I think it won't come across 10 years from now. The same type of thing won't come across as shrill.
I would agree with that.
I think it. I do think that some of this is just simply, oh, it's just we're so used to a male ear, okay, audio-wise. And I think that's why. And you're right. So you were right to point out, I think she's being graded unfairly just simply because of gender,
right,
on that front. But I think it's a, look, she just isn't. She just isn't comfortable as a big room campaigner, right? That's never been her forte.
Right.
That's not something she's great at, and it's something she needs to get a little bit better at. I'll grant you that.
Well, based on now, not 10 years from now, based on now.
I know.
Right, that's what I'm talking about, and it's not meant to be sexist at all, and I don't think it is sexist.
No, it's not, but by the way, you're not wrong that it could be, you know, that it's something that can have that might have an impact on some voters.
So what's a bigger problem for her, honesty or being a bad candidate?
I think her biggest problem is that is the big idea. Why are you running for president, Hillary Clinton? Why you? Why is this the moment? What is it? What is the big idea that only you are uniquely qualified to tackle? Right, Trump, for better or for worse, we know what that big idea is, man. This guy is going to be the great disruptor of Washington.
Yeah, true.
The stuff, okay? We know exactly, and he's Mr. Change. We don't even know what the change is. It actually changes every day what the change is with him. Okay?
Right.
But, right, you know, but it is, he is, number one, he has got the change message, and that's a powerful thing to have. And number two, you know, you sort of have the five-word idea of what he's going to do, not the whole sloganeering of him, but that he is going to be this. That's her challenge. Like right now, she's basically saying, hey, we've been making some progress. I'm the person that's best equipped to keep that progress going. Well, that ain't very exciting, right? That's her challenge.
Yeah, and the dull nature of it continues to allow a 72-year-old Vermont ex-hippie.
74-year-old.
I'm sorry, 74-year-old Vermont ex-hippie to be relevant and continue to be the disruptor on her side. By the way, Trump yesterday was tweeting, as only the big Don can, encouraging Bernie Trump to run as a third-party candidate. It's not going to happen, but does Trump not understand that if he ran as a third-party candidate, he'd take votes from Trump?
Well, I guess that's what he doesn't think that. I think he thinks the other way. Look, I think he would take some votes from Trump, and I think, but he would take more votes from Clinton's left than anywhere else. So he would hurt her more than him. But you know, we know what Trump's up to. The fact of the matter is, the country's screaming for a third alternative. The problem is, it just really isn't. The logistics make it almost impossible to come up with a plausible third alternative, period. But that said, the Green Party candidate and the Libertarian Party candidate, they're going to matter. Their votes are going to matter potentially in some states. You know, if one of them gets 5-6%, or one of them gets even 2-3% in some of these states, it can swing. It could swing a state.
But at this point, do we know who they're going to hurt?
The Greens would hurt the left. The Libertarian hurts the right. I think, pure and simple. I think the Libertarian, personally, I think the Libertarian Party is going to end up becoming the de facto none of the above choice. And so I believe that always hurts the challenging party. Okay, meaning the whoever's the challenger in this. If Hillary Clinton's basically the incumbent. And, you know, the third is just like the way George H.W. would. Perot hurt Bush more,
right,
I think, than Clinton, simply because he was. But in many ways, I always thought he hurt Clinton as much because he was also splitting the change vote. So I think that that's where a third party candidate would probably, in a Libertarian front, hurt Trump more than anybody else.
Are you hearing anything more about the email situation with Hillary and the FBI?
Other than the interview hasn't happened yet. And I can tell you there are people in Clinton's campaign. I don't know if Clinton feels this way, but there are people in the campaign that are like, just please interview her already.
Right.
They just want to get this. Whatever the outcome is, they just don't want it hanging over their head. They just want to get this done.
You know, it's impossible to go a day without just being fascinated. You know, Letterman used to have a great phrase for this. He'd say, yeah, he ain't hooked up right. And every day there's a he ain't hooked right hooked up right moment with Trump, or two or three. Of all the things to not be straight about and to not lie about, the fact that you do a bad impression of yourself is the easiest out he ever could have had. I mean, he just goes back to the 90s and just says, look, yeah, I was trying to drum up some publicity for me. I was trying to get some buzz going for me. Yeah, I admit it might have been a good little goofy, but what's the big deal? And it's over.
That's Trump in a nutshell, man. I know. I mean, he's just, first of all, it is a window into, he is his own publicist. He's his own PR person. He's his own political advisor. He doesn't, look, I've had off the record phone conversations with him as many times as I've had on camera. You know, he does his own, like, hey, I don't understand why you said this. Or, this is just, he manages his own image, and he doesn't trust anybody else to do it.
The New York Times story on how he treats women was not a hit piece. Factual or slightly factual remembrances of interactions with Donald Trump are what they are. But the fact is, there's too many women who have said the same thing about how he has handled situations. And by the way, you can be a complete thug as a male and still hire women and employ women and treat women with respect at work on some level and compartmentalize your life and still go out and be a creep with other women. I don't understand how that's difficult for people to wrap their heads around, because we all know people like that.
Well, and the other thing was, is that, look, Trump has done what many a politician has done for years, which is, When you've got a tough piece against you, and they've got 90% of the facts, find the 10% that they don't have right and just hammer that, right? And that's essentially what he did here. Is he found somebody that says, "Hey, wait a minute," and so they hammer, and it's cast a shadow over the entire piece. But it's funny about that piece. When I saw the piece, I was like, "Well, I don't need to read it. I know this."
Right. Now, exactly right.
Like, this is not new information to people. This was more detail, okay? I'm not saying, you know, the specifics were new, but was the image that it paints new? No. And that's the, in a weird way, this is, to me, what the Clinton campaign is going to struggle with the most, which is a lot of this is baked in with Trump. People know this going in. And so does this, you know, I don't know if it hurts him any more than he's already been hurt with women. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
His stuff's already there. So, you know, I think his greatest vulnerability to me is if somebody undermines his perceived strength. And the perceived strength is that he's a successful businessman. And if that gets traction, you know, his weak spot is anytime his wealth gets questioned or his business acumen gets questioned. And frankly, there's a lot of questionable questions about whether he's been a successful businessman or not. You know,
well, isn't that why the tax returns are such a big deal to him?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Is that maybe it? You know, maybe the emperor has no clothes here, or in this case, has no billions.
Chuck, any inside word on who could be either vice presidential nominee?
I think on the Democratic side, it's more obvious who the front runners are, and I think it's the two senators, one from Ohio, Sherrod Brown, one from Virginia, Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine, if you were to put a gun to my head and say, you know, you had to put all your chips on one person, I'd put it on Kaine. He checks more boxes. Swing state, been a governor and a senator, been a party leader, was an Obama guy in 08, not a Clinton person, so it's a party-uniting thing. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes, isn't somebody that is gaffe-prone, speaks fluent Spanish. Oh, by the way, his father-in-law is a former Republican governor of Virginia. You know, there's a lot of upside to him. Yeah, he's not the most charismatic guy, but he is a do-no-harm person and certainly a governing partner. And I'm told that's what she's thinking of, like, in that model. She wants somebody that she isn't going to be tired of seeing every day. Sherrod Brown is somebody, if you truly are worried about the Sanders crowd, he's a little more progressive. He speaks to the working class vote probably as well as anybody in the Democratic Senate these days, the Democratic side of the aisle. So he's got that sort of gut instinct on that populist. And, oh, by the way, he's from Ohio. So after that, I think everybody else, I'm told Cory Booker is somebody that she personally is fond of and has gotten to know and really likes him. So I think he's going to get vetted. And 6 months ago, I would have said he wouldn't. Some people have floated Deval Patrick, the former Massachusetts governor. I think the fact that he works for the same company that Mitt Romney worked at, Bain, is probably a non-starter in this political environment. And I don't want to say I'll eat my phone if Elizabeth Warren is picked, but if I thought it wouldn't do harm to me, to my bodily function, I would pledge to you I would eat my phone if Elizabeth Warren became the running mate. I think that is the most far-fetched of all the ideas that get floated. I know why it gets floated, but it tells when people float it, they know nothing about the interpersonal relationships of Elizabeth Warren entire Democratic Party in Washington.
Right. No, I totally get it. Well, listen, save the Trump side for next time, because it's not like the story's going to get old. He's the best, man. He's Chuck Todd, host of Meet the Press, and he will do kids' birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and talk politics to the youngsters.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. 7:23.